March 3rd, 1923 was the date stamped on the first issue of Time magazine. For some, a new dawn in American journalism. For others, a day that will live in infamy. In either event, it was the culmination of the dream of two prep school pals at Hotchkiss, who became college co-conspirators at Yale, who became increasingly warring partners as they toiled to change the way ordinary people consume the news. One of those partners became one of the most powerful men of his day, Henry R. Luce. The other was nearly erased from history. His name was Britton Haddon, an eccentric, electric visionary who first dreamed up the idea of a news digest written in short, punchy prose. Without Britton Haddon, there might never have been the great Henry Luce. For that, Luce loved and hated him in equal measure and made sure the world forgot him. Their story is chronicled in a new book by Isaiah Wilner called The Man Time Forgot. In it, Wilner describes how the idea for Time magazine was taking shape when Haddon was still a boy.
Haddon went off to school one day in Brooklyn Heights, and he spoke with a friend who was a Democrat. He'd never really spoken with a Democrat before. He thought the Republicans were in the right. And so he came home from school that day completely shocked. And he told his parents, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to start a magazine that will tell the facts for once and for all. And then there won't be all this confusion about who's right. Then the idea continued to develop throughout Hotchkiss. And that's where he met Luce. Luce had traveled all over Europe, you know, before the age of 15. He was the son of missionaries. He was very shy, lonely. He stuttered. And he was attracted to Haddon almost instantly because Haddon was this glamorous boy who was always cracking jokes, always in the center of the action. So they struck up this rivalry, and the rivalry was what really caused them to get together and ultimately fall in love. They became very close working partners.
They were fighting for the editorship of the paper, just as they went on to fight for the chairmanship of the paper when they were students together at Yale.
When Luce lost the chairmanship of the Yale Daily News to Haddon, it really hit him hard, and in fact, he never really recovered from it. From that moment on, he was quite envious of Haddon, and yet he was still sucked into Haddon's aura. The First World War interrupted their collegiate experience. They were sent down south to Camp Jackson, and it was there when they were training to become officers that they started training some younger, less educated men. It was in the experience of training these men that Haddon and Luce realized, for example, that many Americans were illiterate, that they knew very little about the world. And that was when they got together and decided it would be up to them to solve the problem of human ignorance.
Not the problem of illiteracy, but of ignorance.
Yeah, well, I think it played into ideas that Haddon had already, you know. He didn't want to be a teacher. He wanted to be a journalist.
Luce wanted to be a teacher. He wanted to tell people not just what the news was, but how they ought to think about it and what conclusions they ought to draw.
Luce had inherited a worldview from his father being a missionary, and Luce, in fact, became a kind of media missionary. Time was his vehicle more than a method of distributing the news. It was a way of getting his opinions out, you know, his view of what America's role in the world should be.
What do you think ultimately the impact of Time magazine was on American journalism?
Well, I think it was Time more than any single publication that turned the news into a form of entertainment. There were certainly others before, such as, you know, Hearst and Pulitzer. However, you would have the tabloids and sensational newspapers on the one hand. Then on the other hand, you'd have something like the New York Times, which was pretty complicated, a lot of big words, and really only the elite of the elite would read it. So what Time was able to do was have an entertaining writing style similar to a Hearst newspaper, a little classier and more for the middle class. And then at the same time, they were able to get across everything that you truly needed to know, at least to appear informed.
The original idea, as you describe it, was to create a new voice, a new kind of syntax for news. Short sentences, double-barreled adjectival phrases drawn from Homer. In fact, you note that a volume of the Iliad was always on Haddon's desk.
That's right. And one of the things that really attracted him was the Homeric epithet, such as, you know, the phrase helm-quivering Hector. So Haddon picked this up as a way of getting Americans to remember, you know, who was Winston Churchill. So he would use the phrase, ruddy as a round full moon.
And he called Russian revolutionary Grigory Zinoviev the bomb boy of Bolshevism. If you didn't know who he was when they first mentioned it, after that little epithet, you were absolutely caught up.
Oh, it was just seared in the mind. Yeah. This was the age before television, you know. Back then, people couldn't really see these far off places that they had never been to. And so these epithets were a way of getting people to see the news in their mind's eye.
What were some of the most significant differences in perspective between Haddon and Luce?
Well, Haddon, you know, he was an eccentric guy, and he had a critical view of the business society of the 1920s. And so he actually started another magazine called Tide, which was critical of the whole advertising industry. Luce was very uncomfortable with Tide. Luce wanted to do a different type of business magazine, which later came to be called Fortune.
Which Haddon was against.
Oh, he was totally opposed to Fortune. He thought it was just business boosterism. And at the end of their life, they were really coming to a final confrontation over this.
Haddon died in a Brooklyn hospital, age 31, maybe because of a strep infection that damaged his heart, maybe because of alcoholism, some said. Someone in your book even suggested that he died at least partly of boredom.
It was clear that Haddon was wasting away. The doctors were desperate to help him, but they had no idea what they could do. And it was at this time that Luce came to Haddon's deathbed. And the rumor that went through time and later years was that Luce came at that moment and asked Haddon to sell him enough shares in Time Inc. to ensure Luce's majority control of the company. All that we know is that Haddon, at that moment, brought in his roommate and asked him to write up a will. He was so weak that he could only sign with a hash mark. And he said that none of his stock in Time Inc. should be sold for 49 years because Haddon believed the company would be a success. But if his will were to be followed to the letter, Luce would never really be able to run the company. Actually, when Haddon died, there was a black notebook that was found among his things. And on one page titled Expansion, he had written all of his ideas for the future of the company. This included the idea for Sports Illustrated, Life, to expand Time onto the cinema and onto the radio. All of these ideas were followed through on in the next several years. And yet this black notebook was folded into Time's archive and nobody really knew that it existed.
How, in the end, did Henry Luce bury, and I mean really bury, Britton Haddon?
Well, Luce was heartbroken by the loss of Haddon, but within 2 weeks of Haddon's death, Luce had actually taken Haddon's name off the masthead of Time magazine. Within a year, Luce had broken Haddon's will. He kept a lot of the stock for himself, but he distributed many shares to his closest friends and allies, so that ensured his permanent control of the company. And then, for the next 19 years, he never said anything about Haddon. Finally, after 20 years, he did publish a book about Haddon, and that's when the fiction began to spread that Henry Luce was equally responsible for the idea for Time. He never really talked about Haddon's genius. Haddon had not only come up with the idea, he had hired all of the writers, developed the writing style, and it's strange that this would happen because they were such great friends.
All right. Isaiah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Isaiah Wilner is the author of The Man Time Forgot, A Tale of Genius Betrayal and the Creation of Time Magazine.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.